good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, September the 27th, 2016, 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you are tuned into the Now program. I am Scott Spears, and it is the day after the big presidential debate watched by about 100 million people last night. Can you believe that? We have got a lot to go through here in the next 2 hours. Let me give you a quick update on what you're going to hear over the next 2 hours on this program. Coming up next hour, 1:15, we're going to be joined by the 40th Treasurer of the United States under President Bill Clinton, Mary Ellen Withrow. She will be live in studio with us for the hour, taking your phone calls, 1:15 to 2 p.m. today. Today will be the first reaction that Mary Ellen has to the debate last night. So stay tuned. That's coming up in an hour. This hour, we've got a lot of great guests coming up in the bottom of the hour. We've got former HBO boxing analyst Larry Merchant, who's going to analyze last night's debate for us. That's coming up. And we've got David Plouffe, who was President Obama's campaign manager in 2008, who's going to give his thoughts on the debate and the campaign as it goes along as we are in the 40-day neighborhood. Joining us first is a lady who I love having on the program. She was with us yesterday. She is a former panelist on the great show, The McLaughlin Group, and she currently writes for The Daily Beast. She is Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, how are you?
I'm good, and I watched every minute of the debate last night. It was quite fascinating.
Well, the CNN poll this morning, I want to give this to our audience. CNN says 62% of people who watch the debate say Hillary Clinton won, 27% say Donald Trump won, and in a room of 20 independent voters, 18 said Clinton won, 2 said Trump won. Do you agree with that take?
I do, but I was on the phone this morning with a Trump supporter, a political science guy, and he said that Trump won the flash polls immediately, I guess, when the debate ended, and that he thinks that it's too early to say with any finality, A, who won, and B, whether it will affect the race. My reaction was entirely the opposite. I thought Hillary Clinton really turned in a very strong performance, that she showed herself presidential and ready to handle anything that was thrown at her, and that the paucity of substance in the Trump campaign was really obvious last night. And when he said he wasn't preparing for the debate, and we thought, oh, maybe he's practicing secretly, I don't think so. He really came in there and seemed like he was just going with all his lines from the campaign rallies, and I thought he really did look weak when it comes to command of the issues that he would face if he were elected president.
Eleanor, what happened to the debate coaching by the great Roger Ailes? Where was that last night?
Well, that's interesting, because my assignment this week for the Daily Beast, I was to write a piece about Roger Ailes and kind of reprise his debate history going back to Nixon and on through Reagan and George H.W. Bush and on and on, and he was supposed to be working with Trump. I didn't see any evidence of Roger Ailes' handiwork in Trump's performance last night. I didn't see evidence of anybody else's preparation either. So, I don't know what Roger Ailes was doing, or if he could be happy with the performance that Trump turned in last night.
I heard one of the spin doctors last night say something that, when I first heard it, I thought it might be far off, but maybe not when it's considering Roger Ailes. Somebody said that if you go back to the Reagan-Mondale debates, it was Reagan's second debate where he got the line off about age that made Mondale laugh and put him back in there. If Trump had a really bad first debate and that lulls Hillary Clinton into a false sense of security, and he comes out in the second debate knowing things, I mean, could they have taken that calculated risk?
I think that's too complicated. Oh, let him fail, and then we'll come back and surprise with a strong performance. He did say at the end of the debate that he was planning to say something really tough about Clinton and about her family, and he just decided it wasn't nice and he wouldn't do it. And then I think he kind of left it hanging that he may have to do that next time. But, to sort of go in there and throw the debate, because then you come back and win on expectations the next time, that's too cute by more than half.
You know, it's very interesting what you say there about what he did say. I had something really nasty to say about you, Hillary, but I'm not going to do it because I just can't do it in front of your family. But he left the door open for next time. But next time, people have to remember, is a town hall meeting. And there will be people on the stage asking the questions. Anderson Cooper will moderate. Is that the place to bring up Bill Clinton's extracurricular activity or Hillary Clinton's bullying of women, which is what we assume that is?
Right. I think those issues really only work with his base, and they keep them excited and energized because they really want to defeat Hillary Clinton. I don't think that would work in a town hall forum. Unless one of the questioners brings it up, and I'm sure Hillary Clinton, she was prepared for everything last night, she's got an answer ready for that as well. So somebody has suggested to me she can say that marriage is for sickness and health and for good and for bad, and she's still married to her one and only, and kind of leave that there. He's on his third marriage. But I don't really think people want to hear about that. I just think we're in a live and let live area when it comes to these kind of social issues. So I think that wouldn't even work. It sounds to me like it's an empty threat, but one that he might, if he feels the need at the moment, might actually do it. I mean, that a lot of what he did last night seemed to come out of whatever got to him at that moment. He seemed very peevish, and the back and forth, interrupting when she was speaking, that didn't make him look good either.
The split screen was very interesting. Cameras were on them both all the time. Hillary Clinton never took a drink of water, never coughed. Donald seemed to have the sniffles last night and was drinking a lot, and this morning said that his microphone wasn't working properly. What happened there?
I've noticed him, not only last night it was pronounced, it's as like he takes deep breaths in through his nose, almost like a racehorse, up through their flaring their nostrils. I think that's what he does. And it may be kind of a nervous tic. I didn't notice necessarily that he had a cold. But to blame the microphone, I guess he's saying that the microphone was, his microphone was so sensitive it just picked up everything. That's going to be a hard story to back up. And, some people were suggesting, well, he has a cold, and other people were suggesting, well, maybe he has some sort of a drug habit. I think that's a bridge too far. But, he's opened the door to this sort of, open-ended musing about the health of the other candidates. So he's now getting as good as he dished out.
They have said, and these are the people we all listen to, us included, the media, that the next two debates, just simply out of curiosity, will not have the audience that the debate had last night. That being said, did she disqualify him? Her goal was, we talked about it yesterday, to make him look non-presidential. Did that happen?
I thought it did, but I'm looking at it through my eyes, and I'm not so sure that the people who support him looked at that event and thought that disqualified him. They may feel that he's punched back and he showed himself to be presidential because he fought against the establishment. And let's say on trade, he did have the upper hand. If he had kind of stuck to that more, he might have looked better. But all the furious spinning this morning from each side, and really primarily from the Trump side, saying that, you know, it was an unfair setup and they really did win. This is going to be a hard-fought contest for the remaining 6 weeks. So I think Clinton did well last night, but she shouldn't let down her guard, because it's been such an unpredictable year, and Trump is certainly, I don't think he's not out of it yet.
When the polls come out later on this week, he had tremendous momentum. He was close in Pennsylvania. Wisconsin looked like it was back in play. When the polls come out later this week, or maybe sooner, they'll try to get him out as quick as they can. Will post-debate polls favor Hillary Clinton by quite a bit?
You know, I think it stops his momentum, and I also looked at last night as sort of a parallel to her strong Democratic convention, which gave her a big boost. I think she's going to get a boost out of this. I think people had to look at that stage and see, you know, two people. One, obviously prepared for the evening, for the presidency, and the other kind of flailing away. I think the contrast was pretty stark.
Eleanor Clift, it's always great to have you on, and I hope we talk again when the next debate happens.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Eleanor. Eleanor Clift, writer for the Daily Beast, former panelist on the McLaughlin Group. We should be joined momentarily by David Plouffe. David Plouffe was President Obama's campaign manager in 2008, and of course he won that election over John McCain. Also coming up this hour, don't miss this, we're going to have HBO boxing analyst Larry Merchant, who called many fights over his long career at HBO. Biggest fights in the world, followed Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson, all the greats, Floyd Mayweather, and he's going to give us his blow-by-blow on this election this hour after we discuss this with David Plouffe. We'll also have open phone lines at the bottom of the hour, 740-383-9944, and coming up next hour, first reaction to the debate from 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, so you're not going to want to miss that either here on WWGH Radio. 40th Treasurer of the United States under President Bill Clinton, Mary Ellen Withrow, next hour, 1:15 to 2 o'clock in studio, taking your phone calls. But right now we're going to pivot to David Plouffe. David Plouffe was President Barack Obama's campaign manager in 2008 when he defeated John McCain by a rather substantial margin. David, are you there?
I sure am. Great to be with you.
David, let's see. The CNN polls, where do we start here? The CNN polls last night have it 62% for Clinton, 27% for Trump. In a room of 20 undecideds, 18 said Clinton won, 2 said Trump won. What happened last night?
Well, I think I've been through a few of these, both good nights and bad nights. So, you know, sometimes debates are viewed to be very close in a jump ball. I don't think last night was. I think Clinton, you know, had a pretty decisive night. Now, what that means, you know, means a couple things, hopefully, for her. One, yes, I do think some undecided voters now will have decided to be for her. But plenty will still watch the next two debates. And, you know, we need more energy amongst the Democratic base, the so-called Obama coalition, in Ohio and elsewhere, and I think it definitely enthused Democrats. So it was a really good night for I you know, I said this before the debate, I thought it was the most important moment left in the campaign, so I think she, you know, took advantage of that opportunity. And, you know, I think there's a bunch of moments coming out of the debate, including, you know, Trump kind of doubled down today on talking about how he talked about that Miss Universe winner in terms of her weight, which I just don't think is a very good conversation for him to be having.
He said this morning some other interesting things. He said he would grade Lester Holt as a C last night. Last night he said he thought he did okay. He said there was something wrong with his microphone. He's not saying it's a conspiracy theory, but something might have been wrong there. And his campaign is saying the flash polls show that he won last night, and this isn't over yet. What do you think?
Well, it's delusional. They're in denial. I mean, it's kind of sore loser. Now, listen, you know, we went through a really bad debate against Mitt Romney in 2012, the first debate. You know, we didn't try to suggest somehow we won. We suggested we were going to try and do better. I think George Bush's campaign folks were out last night saying after the first debate they had with John Kerry, which didn't go well, the same thing. So the real question for me is, do they really believe this? If they believe they won, if they believe the microphone was off, then they're not going to really change much heading into debate two. If this is all an act and they know they need to improve, then if you're a Trump supporter, that should give you a little encouragement. But that's my real question is this just kind of sore loser behavior, or do they really believe it?
Roger Ailes was supposed to have been coaching him, the great Roger Ailes, debate coach. Where was that influence last night?
Well, first of all, I have real questions about Trump choosing Roger Ailes, given, you know, all the reports we now know about his behavior. But, you know, setting that aside, if you can, I don't know. I mean, yeah, Ailes certainly is someone who's got a lot of experience, a lot of savvy. I will say this. I mean, the first 10 or 15 minutes, you could see Trump was trying to be more kind of sedated in a way, you know, tried to drive an economic message. So maybe that was the impact of good coaching. But as the debate wore on, he seemed to get a little unhinged, a little distracted, and kind of returned to, you know, the Trump we saw so often in the primary. So that was interesting to me. I think Trump did start off, you know, with a game plan, and he was faithful to it for, you know, the very first part of the debate. Now, what's interesting is, did people stay through the whole debate? And I just saw some, you know, early indications that the ratings stayed consistent throughout. And that's bad news for Trump, because I think particularly the end of the debate, you know, the stuff about calling Sean Hannity about the Iraq war support, you know, the Alicia Mercado, you know, incident where he called her Miss Piggy and Miss Housekeeping, the bizarre kind of rant at the end about Hillary Clinton being unfair with ads. So that all, you know, that was, I think, really the poorest part of the debate. So I think he started off, you know, relatively strong, honestly. But he kind of really slipped as the debate went on.
What I don't understand is if, because we all knew to some degree because of media leaks and things that campaigns leak, that Hillary Clinton's goal last night was to disqualify him and was to bait him into that high-octane person that he can be. If I knew it, he had to know it. Why did he take the bait?
Well, it's a great question, and I think that, you know, I don't think she really swerved out of the lane necessarily. I mean, she took some appropriately tough shots in contrast, but, you know, it's up to you to decide how to respond to them. And I think what we saw was, I think, a window into his temperament and character. You know, my kind of amateur observation of Trump is that he seems most interested in defending himself, even above doing smart things to win the election. And I think that comes out. He just can't help himself, whether it's his business practices, tax returns, things he said about women. So it's very interesting. Now, this next debate is going to be fascinating because it is the town hall debate. Most of the questions will come directly from, you know, the American people in Missouri. And, you know, those are, to me, that's always the most interesting debate because those folks will ask, you know, really important questions that are on a lot of people's minds, but the way they ask them is a little bit different than a moderator might.
Two questions about the next debate that I'm left with right now. Number one, most people say that the next debate, just out of sheer interest in last night's debate, will not be watched by as many people. That being said, did she disqualify him last night as she wanted to do, as having a poor temperament?
Well, I wouldn't say one night alone. I think for people out there that were undecided or were softly supporting, let's say, Johnson or Trump, I think there were questions raised. And, I know, having gone through this very intimately the last couple of elections, the American people take this decision really seriously, who their president is. And it's not just your policy positions that's important, but they do make an evaluation of your temperament and your character and your decision-making. So I think last night was really important. Now, we'll see. Historically, the first debate is the most viewed. What happened to us in 2012, if you recall, was the third debate actually almost matched the first debate because, you know, Romney decisively won the first debate. We had a very good second debate. I think people kind of wanted to watch the rubber match. But, you know, Trump is kind of must-see TV, so I'm sure there'll be a little bit of erosion from the first debate audience. And, you know, we never had any audience approaching this. If the numbers are correct and it's 100 million plus, I mean, that's 35 million more people than President Obama ever had to speak to. So think about that. I mean, that's like more than two-thirds of the people that are going to vote. So that was a really big night last night for that reason. It's by far the biggest audience you're likely to have to directly communicate to.
That being said, he did allude to something at the end of the debate. He said there was something really nasty he planned on saying. He didn't say it last night because the Clinton family was in the audience, but he, in the spin room, said it's not off the table for next time, but next time is this town hall debate, as you mentioned. Is that the right time to bring up Juanita Broderick, Bill Clinton's affairs, Hillary Clinton's treatment of women as he sees it? Is that because we think that's what he's talking about?
Well, first of all, a former political practitioner, I'm happily retired, I think he would be insane to go there because all the things he said about women, obviously he has his own marital and infidelity issues. other behavior that's been talked about. So I'm not sure that's a productive place for him to go. And, you know, I think, I think voters are going to have some sympathy for Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know, no one knows what goes on inside of marriage. She made it decisively, and they've worked through that. And I think it would be insanity to do that. I really do. But I don't know if he can help himself, because clearly he feels, despite them, you know, it's kind of weird. Last night, I actually got back to my hotel room and I saw Trump's Twitter feed, and he was tweeting out, you know, these crazy instant polls, you know, that are, you know, just aggregated on the internet. I mean, the notion that a guy who's running to be president went back to Trump Tower and is sitting there kind of brooding in the dark, tweeting out instant polls of a debate he clearly lost is really bizarre. So I think, you know, that gets to his character, I think, which is, you know, it's win above all else, it's strength against all else, it's never retreat. And so, you know, he may feel compelled to go there, but if I were advising him, and I'm glad I'm not, and I'm not sure if he listens to his advisors. I do think at the beginning of the debate, that was the Trump that his advisors probably hoped to see. I thought Clinton got off to a strong start. I thought Trump got off to a strong start, honestly. And then quickly he kind of reverted back. So, you know, he kind of wants to do what he wants to do. And that's what's really fascinating to me about this, because debates, at the end of the day, these are human beings on the stage. And, you know, you can have prep and you can have strategy and practice, but they're kind of going to want to go to where they want to go, where they're most comfortable. And I think what we saw last night with Trump, that's kind of where he's most comfortable, at the, you know, kind of attacking and not being super substantive, and kind of defending himself. He spent a lot of time talking about himself last night. You know, he started out in the beginning talking about trade and talking about businesses leaving America, and, you know, he seemed to be trying to connect with the American people, and I think he quickly lost that for whatever reason.
In an article in the Washington Post yesterday, the headline read, "Obama's campaign guru, don't fret about polls, Clinton is winning, and she can finish the job tonight." Did it happen?
Well, I think what my point was, one, I think she's in a dominant position in the race, because I think she's got a lead, and I think she's got far and away the best way to get to 270 electoral votes. Many, many different pathways. Trump has to run the table. So given that, if Trump didn't seize the moment last night, which I think was the most important moment for the rest of the campaign, and Clinton would, that would be a very significant moment in the campaign, I think it was. So, you know, we've still got a few weeks here. We've got two big debates left, but I think she went a long way. Now, I will say, you know, Ohio's very close. I think that sounds silly to say, it's always close. But I do think Trump is performing, you know, well in Ohio. I think he's performing well in Iowa. I think Clinton probably is overperforming Barack Obama in Florida, for instance. She's doing very well in Virginia. So I do think Ohio, as it always is going to be a battleground. But, you know, he basically needs to run the table on battleground states. And I don't think last night probably helped him in that regard.
If we go back to September 27th, 2012, you're working with President Obama. Up until election night, Mitt Romney thought he was going to win. Some people feel that Mitt Romney won two of the three debates. That all being said, Obama wins the election in a what they consider an electoral college landslide. If you're Hillary Clinton right now, does it look that way? Are you safe? Are you as safe as Obama was in 2012?
Well, yeah, for the record, I think we won two of three. You know, we lost the first one. You know, Mitt Romney delivered a strong performance and won overwhelmingly. We won the second debate, more competitive, but I think, you know, both the observers and the public thought. And then the third debate, we actually had a dominant performance. But, you know, yes, we felt very confident about where we were on the race, and we ended up winning by 4 points nationally. 332 electoral votes, you know, won Ohio, you know, close, Florida close, the rest of the battleground states pretty easily. So, but that didn't mean we were confident or, we were confident, but, you know, it's an election. So, you know, whatever support you have doesn't matter if it doesn't turn out into actual votes. And, you know, you're trying to turn out a lot of tough-to-turn-out voters. So we were confident, but cautiously so. I think that's where Clinton is now. I think she's likely helped herself last night. It doesn't mean there'll be a dramatic shift in the race, but I think she had a, you know, a small but steady and significant lead. So Trump's got to do something now in the closing weeks to change that dynamic. And, you know, going on Fox News repeatedly and sort of talking to that echo chamber, I don't think is going to get it done. So his really only, I think his two big opportunities are the next two debates. And so if he doesn't, you know, fundamentally shake the structure of the race, you know, I think she's headed to race. And the question is it going to be really close? It might. My belief has been it's likely to open up a little bit for her, you know, and maybe she could win in the 4-6 range nationally. We'll see. You got to prepare for a closer race. The one thing I know that happened last night is Democrats and, you know, members of the so-called Obama coalition, I think, did get motivated. I think they thought that was a strong performance. And honestly, if that's all she did last night, I would have been pleased, because that's an important part of winning. But I do think she probably did a pretty good, made progress with the middle of the electorate, those undecided voters.
David, last question. If you are running her campaign right now and we've got 40-something days left, what does she have to do to put this in the bag?
Well, it's a great question. So, you know, have two more very, very strong debate performances. You almost have to forget that last night happened. Other than what you want to improve on and lessons about Trump, you got to go win the next two, or at least have strong performances. You've got to go out there and do all you can to create a strong enough turnout amongst the base as you can. And I still think that's the number one challenge, because there has been some enthusiasm challenges. And three, you know, just go out there and campaign aggressively every day and try and both make sure people understand. The one thing I think she and I hope this comes out in the second debate even more, it's natural for a town hall, is, you know, kind of that passion and emotion about why she's doing this. Why is she running for president? You know, who is she fighting for? Who is she doing this on behalf of? And link her policies there. I think that's important. But also, you know, to take advantage in the next few days of Trump's mistakes. I mean, I just saw Vice President Biden, you know, talking about Trump saying he was smart not to pay any taxes. I do think there's been a lot of discussion already today about Trump calling the Miss Universe winner Miss Piggy and Miss Housekeeping, those types of things. So that's the other thing. She had a good debate, but Trump also, there was a lot of moments there you can take advantage of. The one thing I'd say about 2012 in the first debate, we had a very bad night, but there wasn't any one moment that became a real thing, as they say. You know, it was just a bad performance. You know, Trump had a lot of things, whether it was taxes, Iraq, you know, calling this poor woman Miss Piggy, you know, talking about Rosie O'Donnell, you know, sort of bragging about the fact that he, you know, took advantage of loopholes that allowed him not to pay his contractors. There was a lot there to work with coming out of the debate. So, you know, I think you can put him on the defensive over the next, you know, certainly to the vice presidential debate. So, you know, if you can do that, that's a, you know, that's 20% of the time left in the campaign.
David Plouffe, it's a pleasure to talk with you, President Barack Obama's campaign manager. Thank you for stepping by.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. David Plouffe, now we're going to go to Larry Merchant to wrap up this hour. Remember, Mary Ellen Withrow coming up next hour, but we're going to get the 10-minute analyzation of HBO boxing analyst Larry Merchant here momentarily. Boy, David Plouffe had a lot to say. And don't forget, when we're done with Larry Merchant here in 10 minutes, Sean Kraft will come back in and we will also discuss what you, the listening audience, have to say about last night's debate. And we'll also do that next hour when Mary Ellen Withrow is with us from 1:15 until 2 o'clock. So that will be very interesting as well. And that's the way it's going to go here for the next few minutes on the Now program. Hope you're listening to us on the internet, www.wwgh1071.com, and the TuneIn app, which you can download free on any mobile device and hear us all over the world. What a great fun this certainly has been. And we are now going to go ahead with our next guest here on the program. We haven't got a chance to talk to him for quite a while. He's one of my favorite people, longtime HBO boxing analyst Larry Merchant, to analyze, that's the perfect word, last night's presidential debate with a guy he knows pretty well, Donald Trump, or fairly well, at least has met him. Larry, how are you?
Good, Scott. How are you?
Doing very well. Now, if you were looking at this like a prize fight and you were analyzing it, tell me about the debate last night.
Well, the guy who challenged the woman's stamina ran out of breath in around the fourth round of the fight and got cuffed around. My informers tell me, he says that the whole thing was rigged because they allowed Hillary to respond to some of the things he said.
Well, and this morning he has let us all know that his microphone was not working properly.
I don't know. I mean, we heard everything he was saying, and apparently some people saw him sniffling, and, you know, he's never had to stand up to anybody for 90 straight minutes, so I think his stamina as a debater was certainly questioned, whether you like what he said or not.
The CNN polls this morning say that 62% of people who watched it say Hillary Clinton won, 27% say Donald Trump won, and in a room of 20 undecided voters in Orlando, Florida, 18 said Hillary Clinton won, 2 said Donald Trump won. Is that, that's pretty decisive.
I'm a little skeptical of winning and losing of debates and what influence that has, but it's an important stage of an election, and it gives us the best chance to size up the contestants, and I think Hillary showed she had done her homework. He disdains homework. Look, I've met Donald Trump, and to me, he's another version of one of your great citizens, Don King. He's a classic American circus barker. What has always puzzled me is how people can think that because a man runs a successful business, the object of which is to make money, how that qualifies him to run a successful country. I don't get it. But there are a lot of frustrated citizens, and frustrated in one way or another, and he has, with his bluster, been able to arrive at this stage, and he's a formidable character.
Is he a guy who can learn from last night? Can he, before October the 9th, go back and say, I did this wrong, I need to do something different?
Look, he's not a dumb guy, but when he's been riding his own wave for as long as he has, and riding over experienced, seasoned, smart men and women who have contested with him, then we're in the age of the showman trying to achieve serious power, and there have been similarities in other Western countries where something like that has happened in the past. So, you know, here he is, and it was interesting to me watching that, how he kept banging away on a few of his themes. Bad trade deals, politicians don't know what they're doing, I'm the only one who can solve all of these problems, etc. And it just occurred to me that the reason that he ran out of wins was he's got nothing else to say. That's it. He's a great soundbiter, and blusterer, and salesman. There's nobody questions that at all. But when you've pitched the snake oil, and now you have to explain other matters and get into some detail, he goes right back to pitching the snake oil, because that's what he knows.
He alluded at the end of the debate last night that there was something really nasty he could have said, but he chose not to because the Clinton family was there. But then back in the spin room, he said it's not off the table for debate two or debate three. Debate two on October the 9th is a town hall meeting where the questions will come from the audience on stage. Would that be the time to bring up extramarital affairs or poor treatment of women that he believes that she has done, because we assume that's what he's talking about?
Yeah, that's the general assumption, but he's a poor messenger for that when you think about it. I mean, she can say she fought to hold her marriage together, and he just, you know, changed wives like some people change sheets, and was involved in public scandals himself. Now, he wasn't president when that happened, and you know, presumably it will change the narrative for a while. But you know, I and look, he's still in the game. He's, you know, according to the polls, but his handling of women and all that, I don't think that's going to win the suburban housewives. If that's the difference that the pollsters have been telling us in how the election will fall.
He's not a dumb man. You're correct on that matter. But why did he take the bait? I mean, the talk leading up to this debate was she is going to try to bait him, to make him lose his cool, to disqualify him as having the right temperament. What if I knew that was the plan, he knew that was the plan. Why did he take the bait every time?
Well, because he is she has her flaws, he has his flaws. His flaws, he's all ego. But also, how do you really deal with the fact that for 5 years he insisted that our president was not an American, and then just switch it off with one sentence and never have to explain, why did you change your mind all of a sudden? I mean, that's a fact of life. It was a fact of life that he won't expose his tax returns. What is he hiding? So it's a fact of life that the generals don't know anything and he has all the answers. It's a fact of life that women are inferior. I mean, I thought the body language of the show, of him continually interrupting her and making faces, was the kind of thing that women have seen all their lives. And aren't too happy about, except those women who think that men should rule. I have a question for you, Scott.
Go ahead.
He keeps one of his tropes is he keeps saying the country's in a mess. Is Ohio in a mess? Is where you live in a mess? Do you have that feeling?
Not particularly, and to that effect, our governor, of course, ran for president, and he is very popular, won the last election here by 60%, and campaigned on the idea that Ohio is now in a surplus.
All right, so you're in one of the important states in the election, and I don't know, do people sitting there watching the show and him saying the country is in a mess, do they ask themselves, things are going pretty good. I mean, economically, they may not be soaring, but from everything I read, for most people, and there are always going to be people for whom the economy doesn't run well, we're not living in a terrible time. But he keeps saying how we're in a mess, and I'm trying to figure out. I mean, I know where I live. I don't sense that. And I'm just wondering about you and the next guy I talked to from some other part of the country. I will ask them, do they feel really that this country's in a mess? I don't get that.
That being said, who are these 43% that are voting for him? What are they voting for?
I think they're voting against. I think they're for the outsider. I think that in many ways they're frustrated, or they're just, you know, good old-fashioned conservative folk who are committed through generations to viewing the world in a certain way and being conservative. They would, they just have to work, vote with their hearts and their traditions. I get that. But there are also you know, a certain margin of people who don't like Hillary. Maybe that's a metaphor for something else. So I or politicians in general, and it's a protest vote. I don't know. And there are also people who are totally consumed by the possibilities of immigration and racism and all sorts of bad stuff, and who see the bad before they see the good. And you know, I think I'm living in a pretty good country that's in a pretty good place after practically going off the cliff 7 or 8 years ago with the economy. And so I you know, and it's imperfect, but as Winston Churchill said about democracy, it's the worst form of government except all the others. And I think we live in a pretty great country, and I'm not sure what the hell he's talking about.
With 3.5 minutes to go, I'm going to throw you two long balls here, Larry. When we open up the phone lines here in Ohio with $1.99 gas that I picked up yesterday, and a surplus, as our governor will say, every call, 99% of the calls we get when we open up the phone lines to the listening audience, they're not necessarily pro-Trump, but they are anti-Hillary. To the point to where when I'm answering and pointing out some of the things they're saying are lies, we get labeled a pro-Hillary station. Now, they can say that, that's fine, but I don't ever hear anybody calling in to say anything negative about Trump. And here are two very interesting points. Yesterday, our final caller, I said, why are you voting for Trump? What's the reason? Went right into Hillary Clinton. I said, now give me the reason you're voting for Trump. Don't use the word Clinton. Don't use the word Hillary. That woman who was Secretary of State did such and such and such and such. I have people call in who are Republican, I think have always voted Republican, who are not voting. They're either not voting at all, writing in names, voting for Gary Johnson, but they say they're more comfortable with Trump running the country. If he gets it, they'll be more comfortable. What is that?
I think there are some people who think that a woman should not be a president for a myriad of reasons, and it's something that is true to them. I think that Hillary Clinton has been a victim of, to some degree, she's hardly perfect, of double standards because of that. And she's been in the public eye for more than 30 years, whether as a first lady to a governor and a president, or as a United States senator or secretary of state. And I don't know too many politicians who've been around that, politicians or people in the political game who've been around that long, who haven't had made mistakes or had unintended consequences of good acts and so on, and built enemies. And for whatever reason, she has built enemies. I haven't seen her convicted of anything. I haven't seen hard evidence about anything in these scandals that she's been involved in, all these commissions that have always been examining her and making accusations, and then they, at the end of the day, they come up with nothing. You know, she does have some flaws as a political candidate, apparently, to a lot of people. I just wonder where that deep hatred for her really comes from. I don't get it, and I don't think she's a saint by any means. She's just a tough politician, and who's been out there on the front pages for decades and decades, and so they will have to explain them. I mean, I've seen a lot of interviews with people who are Trump candidates and Trump supporters, and I read long articles about, serious articles about who are they and why do they think that way and so on and so forth, and many of them echo your experience of they just don't like the damn woman.
It for some reason there is that out there in the ether. We'll see if that changes after last night. Larry, I've got to ask you this. You've met the man. You were with HBO for a long time, the boxing analyst. He was at a lot of fights. A lot of the fights you went to were in buildings that he owned. Would you vote for the man? Why or why not?
I couldn't vote for Donald Trump. It's interesting, you know, the Wall Street Journal just had a long piece. Nobody's ever accused the Wall Street Journal of being liberal, in which nobody in the top 100 of their businessmen, companies, and so forth supports Donald Trump. And these are the people who know him best. You know, I knew him as, you know, a co-promoter, a guy who was putting on big events. He seemed like the kind of interesting, colorful hustler, rustler you would find in boxing. The idea that he could be running the country never entered my mind. I never heard him say anything like it. He was a guy who added zero, like a lot of promoters would always add at least one zero to anything that was going on, and was a great flatterer, and especially of himself, and a fantasist, meaning a promoter, meaning a salesman. And in that world, he was just another interesting guy, but the idea that you could transfer that kind of personality and temperament into president of the United States, if somebody had asked me that, I would think the questioner was out of his mind.
And this is somebody who met Donald Trump on several different occasions, so there you go. Larry Merchant, the most famous boxing analyst of all time and a great, great friend of this show and for many years on HBO. Larry, we hope to have you back soon. Maybe we'll bring you back after the next debate if you're
okay,
available.
Okay, Scott, and if you get people to identify the mess and the and why they hate Hillary so much out there in Ohio and the Midwest, let me know.
We'll try to figure it out. Thank you, Larry. Bye-bye. We're going to take a break. 10 minutes coming back with the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, to get her first reaction to last night's debate. Don't go anywhere. Marion, Ohio.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a Constitution.